This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new film, Searching for Bobby Fischer, is about a chess prodigy. Joe Mantegna plays the boy's father. As part of our weekly series of interviews from the archives, we're going to hear an interview with Mantegna recorded in 1991, soon after his roles in Godfather 3 and Homicide. Mantegna is probably the leading interpreter of David Mamet's writing. Mantegna starred on Broadway in Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross and Speed the Plow. He starred in Mamet's films House of Games, Things Change, and Homicide. Mamet writes dialogue that turns colloquial speech into poetry. Here's a scene from House of Games. Mantegna plays a con man who has been teaching some of his cons to a psychiatrist played by Lindsay Krause.
Give me your hand. Think of a finger. Think of one. You thinking of one?
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna tell you which finger you're thinking of. Do you think I can do that? This one.
Yes. How did you know?
How did I know? Because you were thinking of it. Do you want to make love with me?
Excuse me?
Because you're blushing. That's a tell. The things we think, the things we want, we could do them or not do them, but we can't hide them.
What is it you think I want?
I'll tell you. Somebody to come along. Somebody to possess you. To take you into a new thing. Would you like that? Do you want that?
Yes.
What is it?
Yes.
That's good.
I wanted to know if Mantegna thinks of his lines in a musical way, and if he thinks out where the accents will fall in each line.
I studied acting for a couple of years at the Goodman School of Drama, which was the Goodman School of Drama, is now DePaul University here in Chicago. And one of the more beneficial courses there was, you know, scoring a script and being able, in other words, to take the material and read it like a piece of music and understand, make notations and understand that if when you're given a certain sentence, there's a variety of ways that sentence could be delivered, depending, of course, on which word you're going to emphasize or just the lilt of your voice or this, that, and the other. Because David Mamet has obviously put a lot of attention into writing just the right wording and the right punctuation to get his point across.
Do you ever improvise within a Mamet script, or is everything, you know, as it is in the text?
Well, I would say that improvisation in terms of the dialogue is pretty minimal and should be.
Why should it be?
Because some writers write with the freedom for verbal improvisation in there. I've worked for Woody Allen. Now with Woody, he will give you that freedom. In other words, but it's intentional. In other words, Woody will write his dialogue, but it isn't written totally in stone. And, of course, coming from working a lot with Mamet, as I have, my initial reaction when I first was working with Woody was I would give him exactly every word he has written it. You know, I'd improvise in terms of my delivery and things like that, as I do with any material. But he, early on, like at first or second day of shooting, I remember him saying to me, he says, oh, listen, Joe, you know, don't feel like you're locked to these words. You know, if you want to add some stuff or you just want to go with it or, you know, change this, that, or the other, that's fine. Go ahead and do it. And so, oh, well, okay, once I had that signal from him, then there were instances where I would, you know, vamp or riff or whatever words you want to use for it as to making alterations as to what I'm saying. But that's Woody's style. That's the way he works, and that's how he writes. Of course, if he wasn't getting what he wanted, he'd be the first one to say, well, maybe don't say that. Say something else.
Right.
But where with David, it's a different ball game because he just writes differently. He's a man who has specifically, I mean, he writes in iambic pentameter, so it's not unless a person naturally speaks that way, it would be a little risky to just say, well, I know you wrote this line, Dave, but I think I'll say it this way.
My guest is actor Joe Mantegna. He's currently starring in Searching for Bobby Fischer. He starred in many David Mamet films and plays and co-starred in Woody Allen's film Alice. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. We're featuring a 1991 interview with Joe Mantegna recorded after his film Homicide.
Is Homicide written in iambic pentameter?
I mean, I haven't sat down with a metronome and counted out, but I would say yes. I mean, I would think that everything he's written is within those rhythms. I mean, I don't know how strictly he adheres to it, and it's not important. It's a thing that's just there, and it's part of the beauty of the material.
Well, you know, you play a cop who's very alienated both from, I mean, the guy's got no family. He's got no personal life. He seems to have no friends outside of his partner, and he's even alienated from a lot of the cops that he works with. And in the last scene particularly, all of that alienation, because there's been a couple of final betrayals, really register on your face. And I was really wondering what you were thinking about during the shooting of that last scene to get that kind of dazed alienation on your face.
Well, I tell you, it all led toward that. I mean, playing that role, it was a monumental role for me. It was the most difficult role I've ever played, and certainly in film, partly because I'm in, outside of the first minute of the movie, I'm in every frame. And that translates into working 12-hour days, day in, day out, consistently, week after week, under very harsh conditions, in very unpleasant environments, dealing with some very serious and disturbing things. And that starts to wear on you after a while. In a way, you control some part of it, but a lot of it I had no control over, and it was okay, because I felt a lot like this person, this Bobby Gold. I even told David when we wrapped the film that of all the characters I've played for him, this was the one I was going to miss the most, because I liked the man very much.
Yet you seem so different from him. I mean, you've been married a long time. You have two children. You seem to really, like having a family. Everybody, you know, when I read about you, everybody has such wonderful things to say about you, and how you'd never say anything bad about anybody else, and how nobody has anything bad to say about you. Well, so it seems like such the opposite picture of this kind of isolated, alienated fellow that you play.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, I enjoy my life. I mean, my family, my friends, I feel I live a very fortunate life. And I feel blessed to have that life. But yet I think all of us, even those of us who have been so fortunate to have had, a wonderful life, there is that little bit in them, that isolated thing, that almost I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, but it's like you're born alone and you die alone, that almost kind of thing in you that says, I mean, we used to joke about it, with a phrase of, hey, we're all in this alone. And there's some truth to that. And so it's just tapping on that and expanding on it and creating a character who's pretty much wrapped around, in my case, let's say, the Joe Mantegna, who's had these very lonely, isolated moments in his life, and just stringing them together and saying, now this is a guy who's had a hell of a lot more of them.
Can you think of one of those moments that you're thinking of in your life that you'd be able to share publicly?
Well, I actually, as I'm thinking about it now, I remember it was about 20 years ago. I had just starting off my professional career as an actor. I was in my early 20s, and I remember it was a holiday. I think it was my birthday. That's what it was. It was my birthday, and things were all going actually very well for me. But my birthday's in November in Chicago. That's a pretty cold month. And for whatever reasons, and I can't even remember specifically why, there was nobody around for my birthday. And I remember I was in my apartment, and it wasn't a bad time in my life. As I said, I was working, things were happening. But for whatever reasons, there was nobody around. I wasn't involved with anybody at that time. And I remember sitting in my apartment. I was eating some tuna fish casserole that I had made for myself. And I remember sitting there eating it thinking, I guess I should be doing something. I should go out somewhere and do something. It's my birthday. I think it was 22, 23 years old. And I remember this terrible feeling of loneliness, of like just wanting to talk to somebody or just share something with somebody. And obviously it did have some impact on me for me to recall what I was even eating at that time.
Yeah.
And to be able to tell you right now. So thinking of moments like that and thinking that this is a character that perhaps has spent a lot of birthdays doing that and a lot of holidays doing that, that helps you really tap into certain kinds of feelings for, you know, the character, a guy who basically lives for his career, who lives for his job, and that's the only thing that gets all of his attention, and everything else is just his own personal life is a long string of eating tuna casseroles by himself.
I want to ask you about your role in Godfather 3. You played Joey Zaza, the gangster with the finest suits, and he's taken over the illegitimate Corleone business interests, and his people are dealing drugs, and he's basically going to war with the Corleone family. I thought you had exactly the right amount of kind of menace and style and all that kind of like public relations flair that that certain gangsters have.
Well, I felt that Francis, in a way like Mamet, writes and directs in a certain kind of a style. And for me, his style is almost operatic and almost regal. I mean, there's a scene in Godfather 3. It's a scene that I'm in and at the it's supposed to be a meeting of all the dons in Atlantic City. And there's a scene where they're passing around a table with jewelry and they're each picking, you know, rings or whatever, things of value as to be taking as tribute almost, as gifts. I mean, that scene itself to me struck me as being so ancient Rome or something right out of, you know, the Renaissance. It had a majesty to it, and to me that was how I tried to key into my character, that even though it's very contemporary, it's, you know, it's now, it's America, it's this world of gangsters and, you know, cops and robbers and whatever, but yet underneath that there's a certain kind of style and sense of almost you know, regal royalty kind of thing. You know, these are the princes and dukes and earls of this profession. And that's what I found really interesting about it.
A lot of people assume that the Joey Zaza character that you played in Godfather 3 was in part modeled on John Gotti because they're both, you know, the mobsters with the best wardrobe, you know, with the finest suits. Did you look at any Gotti news clips or anything like that?
No, because I never used Gotti as my, you know, role model for the role. I mean, if people wanted to make those assumptions, that's fine. But my feeling was it goes much broader than that. I mean, that's an obvious comparison you could make. But yet those kinds of characters in gangland lore have existed a lot longer than the current, you know, John Gotti thing. I mean, you know, Bugsy Siegel was a very, you know, dapper, well-dressed guy. And so the clothes are different, but basically the demeanor is basically the same. You know, in other words, a guy who wears $2,000 suits is going to walk and talk and act a little differently than a guy who's wearing stuff from Kmart.
Did you know any guys who had $2,000 suits?
Oh, yeah. I know guys who have $2,000 suits. I mean, I grew up in Cicero, Illinois, so there was a lot of guys with $2,000 suits walking around. But, you know, it's helpful in the sense of being able to recall drawing on that image of guys who dressed very expensively who seemed to have nothing to do at 3 o'clock in the afternoons on weekdays, you know. So I always used to struck me as being very incongruous. It's just like, gee, my dad's at work. I wonder why he isn't.
You seem to be at a new stage in your career. You're much better known than you were, you know, just a couple of years ago. Is there a difference in the kind of screenplays you're being sent now and the types of roles that you're being asked to read?
Well, somewhat. I mean, I'm certainly getting more offers to do, you know, what I would have considered leading man roles, you know, years ago. And also, since I wasn't doing leading man roles years ago, it is kind of new for me. I still think of them, I think of any role as a character role, though. If it's a leading, what someone else would call a leading man role, in my attitude is, well, it's a character role of a leading man. Because that's just my background. I've played all kinds of character roles all my life. So there, you know, there's more often there's roles where I get to kiss the girl, you know, which I, instead of shoot the girl, you know, which I perhaps had a bigger career doing. So it's, again, it's an ongoing evolution.
One last question. What's the difference between playing a leading man as a leading man and playing a leading man as a character actor?
Less makeup, I guess. That's all. You know, I usually tend to just walk on the set and say, no makeup here. Just, you know, just let me know if my hair's in my eyes and, you know, cover maybe this one little blemish that, you know, looks like it's ready to go. Outside of that, let's just wing it, you know.
You have a say in that? I'm surprised.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think when you're first starting out as an actor, you're willing to, like, just trust everybody and say, oh, yeah, go ahead. Do what you will with me and throw me out there, and I'll just, you know, and I won't say a word, and hopefully you'll just pay me and send me home. I think later on, as you start to do it, you realize, hey, look, regardless of everybody else's input, it's your mug that's up there for, you know, maybe 50 years from now. As I'm looking at the old Bogart movies, some other little kid's going to be looking at my movies and say, that's that Joe Mantegna. Yeah, oh, yeah. We heard he was an actor back in the, you know, the 90s. So that's what he looked like, kind of, you know. So, no, I think it's important you have a say in that somewhat, you know.
And you don't want somebody looking at it 50 years from now saying, but how come he was wearing eyeliner under his eyes?
Yes, exactly. Jesus, you know, he doesn't seem the type to be wearing that much makeup. So, yeah, I think it's important to have some input.
Joe Mantegna, recorded in 1991. He's now starring in Searching for Bobby Fischer. This is Fresh Air.